This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. Is our property market in a bubble and about to witness a correction? My guest today, Carmelo Filito, believes so. His study, Affordable Housing and Cyclical Fluctuations, examines problems within the Malaysian property market. He's a senior fellow at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known by its acronym IDEAS. Carmelo, thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, if I can begin, why did you want to look at this issue? You're an economist by training. What caught your interest about the Malaysian property market?
Well, if I have to be honest, I started to be interested in the Malaysian property market just as a citizen, as a layman. When I moved in Malaysia 7 years ago, I was looking around and I could observe new buildings popping up everywhere. And I was quite struck, and I was thinking, well, Malaysia is such a small country, who is going to live here? And so this observational curiosity moved me into a much deeper research because, I was coming from Europe, from Italy specifically, where we just had a general economic crisis that was also affecting the property market, and I was curious about potential similarities.
So 7 years ago, and you were seeing all these new buildings, and they were mostly expensive condos and high rises. What does that tell you? Are just these two factors? You wrote that expensive high rises and the lack of affordable housing. Are those two indicators alone enough to point us in the direction that we are looking at a bubble?
Well, not necessarily, in the sense that these are like the most evident part of the situation, but the situation has, of course, an historical background. And in my research, I pointed out that the initial trend of investment devoted toward high-rise buildings, high-rise flats, was not unjustified. The trend of the demand was indeed there, and the demand for the high-end segment was growing faster than the demand for affordable housing. So I would say that the interest of developers in that segment was initially justified by the demand trend. Of course, then is something that we have to realize. Booms and crisis, growth and crisis are part of the capitalistic dynamic. At a certain extent, we can't avoid them. So even if the press, stress regarding my paper, the idea of a bubble that is going to burst, I'm more keen to talk about cyclical fluctuations, okay? So less aggressive terms, but that better represents the reality of developments that happen everywhere in the market.
Inevitable. So no matter what the government do, no matter how interventionist, we will still see a bubble.
We will still see cyclical fluctuations, if you allow me to use this term.
and is it generally as understood, because as a nine-year period where, the property goes through this cycle?
Well, yes. In economic theory, we tend to observe very long-term cycles, secular cycles that last 60 years.
Very long-term is 50, 60.
50, 60 years. Then we have medium-term, so 9, 10 years, as you just mentioned, and we might have even shorter fluctuations, 2-3 years. This depends on markets, depends on innovations, on demand trends. These are things that happen. So the economic development presents inside some feature that drive toward instability. But because the market is done by human beings, and human beings are by definition not perfect, so they make mistakes, they follow feelings that are not always right. Just to give you a simple example, if you walk into your office today and you suddenly fall in love with one of your colleagues, you start to set up a plan to conquer your colleague. But this does necessarily mean that you will be able to conquer her? Not necessarily. You might make mistakes along the way, but you will discover this only ex post, only after you implement your strategy.
Right.
And if you sum up this for all the market agents, all the millions and billions of market agents that act every day in the real life, we have to realize that mistakes are part of our daily routine.
So you mentioned just now that the demand was there, the trend was there. What happened to it?
Well, the demand was there. A certain credit support was also there at the second moment. And a typical dynamic that I observe in all the cyclical fluctuation is that when a boom starts, initiated by profit expectations, people expect to make money by investing in a certain industry, usually the initial investors are always followed by imitators, by other people that perceive that something is going well in a market, and let's say nobody wants to be left out. Mm-hmm. And this overheat the market that we are observing. And this market grew, and we could see a peak of transaction around 2012, 2013. And from there, we start to observe a stabilization. The number of transactions start to decline. The prices tend to stabilize. And this is also an important indicator. It's true that prices are not declining yet, but are stabilizing. And this, I believe, is an important indicator because before the folding down of the prices, we have to observe a stabilization.
So there's going to be a fall. I guess the investors or homeowners are going to be happy to say that prices have not dropped, but you're saying it's going to drop.
Well, it depends very much on what the government will do, of course. So policies will determine the trend of prices, but whenever a crisis starts, if we want a crisis to be beneficial in some way to the economic system, we have to let it go. And usually one of the consequences is that prices are going down. And I observe this. If you look at the prices of houses in Spain or USA after the crisis, yes, they went down almost at the level of the pre-crisis level.
Right. Why do you not like the term bubble?
Because it's difficult to define. So I've seen that after my latest declarations, a lot of commentators started to say, no, it's not a bubble. We can't talk about a bubble. We can't talk about a burst. So I believe it's more a matter of terminology. So it's a term that rise a lot of conflicts, a lot of misinterpretations. And if we talk about bubble, in a way, we are talking about something very exceptional. While I still want to stress the idea that these cyclical dynamics are part of our economic life. And at a certain extent, we cannot avoid them. We can try to moderate, but they will always happen. And if you look at economic history, you will find a lot of them everywhere. Mm-hmm. And regarding every product, starting with the tulip bulbs in the 17th century,
right.
The new economy at the beginning of this century.
Yeah. I think the previous government saw this trend of escalating prices and oversupply of new houses, and they've introduced some cooling measures, right, to kind of tame the market a little bit. Has this helped in contributing towards the stagnation of prices?
Well, you mean like blocking the licenses, the permits for new buildings? But in a way, these help. But I would prefer to see this phenomenon happening in a natural way, because the government might think that acting in a certain direction will bring out a certain result, but the last judge is only the market. So when people act every day in the market, they know the direction, they will discover the direction where to move. So we don't really need government to put caps on or block new projects. I would rather see a lack of intervention, a step back from the government, and letting this crisis more or less to make its course.
Yeah. We'll come back and talk more about how much regulation is appropriate after we take this short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. On this show today is Carmelo Felito, Senior Fellow at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known by its acronym IDEAS. We're discussing the Malaysian property market. Carmelo has released a policy paper titled Affordable Housing and Cyclical Fluctuations, his study on the Malaysian property trend. You feel the market should be the ultimate judge and the government should lay off its hands a little bit. But is it not because there was a lack of regulation that we end up here in the first place? There was so much property speculations, the banks were giving easy credits, and property developers were over-optimistic with the market demands.
Well, I'm not saying that government is useless. Government is can play a very important role indeed, and you touch a point, the point of easy credit in example. So I believe that government should focus, in example, on very strict regulation on credit. Okay, Malaysia, I have to say, is playing better than the way in which Europe played 10 years ago on the banking system. I remember that people without real guarantees were given loans equal to 120% the value of the property that they were going to buy. So
they got leftover cash.
Yes, yeah, right. Yes. So the credit market was so overexcited and so unregulated that a lot of mistakes were done. In this sense, I believe Malaysia is playing on a more prudent side, and this is good. Mm-hmm. But this kind of framework is where the government should focus. Pay attention that the credit market doesn't get over-initiated, over-enthusiastic about the situation. Yeah, yeah. There is
because there was a point in time where we were able, or Malaysians were able, to buy properties for almost no money down, 100% loans. What is the extent of our government involvement in the housing market?
Well, as I mentioned, I see for them a higher possibility to play in regulating the credit market, yes, but in the opposite direction where they are going now, because they are announcing more credit facilities. This is not the direction where I would like to see the government going. From the other side, we have a very high involvement of the government in the affordable housing project, which is the other side of my research and papers. We all know we have 20 agencies active. The government is planning to bring them down to 6, if I'm not mistaken. This high involvement, according to my opinion, played a role in the overexcitement in the high-end sector. Because if developers, okay, they have seen for years high opportunities in the high-end segment, they invested there. At a certain point, they might have realized that profit opportunities were going to disappear there, and they might have thought to move toward the affordable housing market. But then you find the government there. And most probably, this presence, this heavy presence, is going to block, to stop the desire from the developer side to get involved in that market, which might present maybe less profit opportunities but more stable in this moment in which the high-end market is obviously saturated.
Right. So a common refrain is that money can't be made in the affordable housing sector, hence government involvement. Is that true, or is it the fact that, as you mentioned, because there are so much government involvement in that area, either through GLCs or government agencies, mm-hmm. that they are crowding out the private players?
Well, I give you a very simple example. Malaysia has a very developed food market. Okay, you more or less can eat with whatever budget you want. You have street food for 3-4 ringgit, and you have expensive Italian restaurants for 200-300 ringgit a person. Okay, so why we still have street food? Why we still have people on the border of the street selling tetarik or nasi lemak in the morning before the people go to office? Because there are profit opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I believe that if it is true that there is a demand for affordable housing, as it seems to be there, then there are profit opportunities. But again, how can we discover this? Is the market. In the moment in which you let the market be there, some entrepreneur will smell profit opportunities, will start to invest there, and if he will be successful, probably he will be followed by other entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that the Pakatan government has promised to do in their manifesto is to set up a national affordable housing council by placing all the agencies or relevant agencies under one roof. But you don't like that idea.
No.
Why not?
Well, I give you a simple example. One thing is to know how to make a chair. Okay, this is called technical knowledge. Another thing is to know if the market needs that chair. And this is entrepreneurial knowledge. The entrepreneur doesn't really need to know how to make a chair, but he needs to believe and have experience in the market to see that the market needs that chair. Eventually, he can hire later on the technical knowledge to produce that chair. From the government, we can expect at best technical knowledge, okay? But because they don't play in the market, they are not acting every day in the market, they cannot know what the market needs. This is a very important point that is underestimated in the economic analysis. In the end, what is the government? The government, or an agency, a government agency, is a group of people that are taking decisions. So it is better that many people take decisions for many, or that few people take decisions for the many. Where do you have the highest chance of mistake? So yeah. we have to move away from the idea that the government in somehow possess a super knowledge, that it can know what the market needs, what is good for the people. Not to criticize the government, but to be realistic. The government is just a group of people, a group of limited people. The market is made by the interactions of millions of people every day, that through this interaction, they discover each other. They discover each other's needs, they send each other messages, they use the price system to communicate their preferences, their tastes, their expectations, and somehow Paris got fed. Okay. Instead, if we leave these decisions only to a small group of people, somehow the chance of mistakes is much higher. Okay, I don't want to quote the extreme example of Venezuela, but there is the extreme example of what happened when only few people are in charge of all the decisions and they take out the market.
Mm-hmm. So if we come to the end of the fluctuation, prices are going to go down. It's going to be good for consumers because it's a readjustment or correction. Mm-hmm. From the government side, that's not going to look good. Are you saying they should just ride it out and not try to do too many things?
Yeah. In the end, the government is telling us that they want affordable housing. And the best way to get them is first to let the crisis to happen, because this will bring the prices down. Mm-hmm. So any attempt to delay the crisis will simply delay the readjustment. And this readjustment sooner or later will have to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess one last question on the problem of high-rise expensive apartments before we move on to what we can do about affordable housing. What did you make of some of the other measures on to cool the market, such as limiting foreign ownership as well as introducing taxes when to prevent people from flipping or making speculative investments?
Well, in a moment of difficulties, of course, every measure that cut out potential buyers is not good. But I can understand the concern from the government side of keeping out fewer speculators or big owners from China or from other countries. So my proposal is to adopt a mixed strategy. We have different kind of foreigners, okay? We have foreigners that decided to settle down in Malaysia. I'm one of them that lives here, pay taxes here, they have a job. They have demonstrated that they have made Malaysia a sort of second home. So my idea is to open the market toward this category of foreigners that are actually living and having their daily routine in Malaysia and eventually keeping out the big investors from abroad. Mm. This will happen. This will help, I think, to absorb part of the unsold properties. Of course, now if you think in Selangor, a foreigner has a limitation of 2 million ringgit. You can't buy for less than that. But if you are, we are not all expatriates from the oil and gas sector. So there are a lot of people that work as teachers, as admin, as medium-level managers. Why don't allow them to buy for half a million?
Yeah. Do we categorize foreign as also PR holders?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Okay.
But what I have in mind mostly is the Talent Corps program. Mm-hmm. It's similar to the Second Home, but is a program that allow you to be considered as a local worker, so you don't need anymore a working visa if you've been in Malaysia for a certain number of years with a certain income. So I would extend the benefit of paying houses same like the Malaysians.
Mm. So on the affordable housing side, at our income level, what should be considered affordable?
Well, on this, I believe that we need more a micro investigation in the sense that what is affordable in Selangor or in Kuala Lumpur is probably not affordable in the remote kampung. So even if we use the system of the median and we calculate 20 times the income of the households, this is very different state by state and urban area toward versus rural areas. So I would adopt quite a mixed concept because we cannot use a definition that is valid all over Malaysia. This would be impossible because again, what is affordable in Selangor is not affordable probably in Pera.
Mm-hmm. What about in KL and Selangor? What would that figure be?
Well, I believe that the figure from Bank Negara probably is the most accurate, around 300,000.
Yeah. Mm, okay. You also recommend more people consider renting instead of house ownership.
Yeah.
Is this a feasible idea considering the cultural legacy of, you know, property ownership in this part of the world?
Well, culture is also an evolutionary path, you know, and we can't think that because we always did things in this way, we can keep going doing the same. You know, in the moment in which reality is telling you that you can't buy, you cannot go against reality, and you cannot bring the prices down by force, with the force of the law. So we all need a shelter, and if you can't buy, you rent. And I think this implies a switch in mentality and the idea that we don't have to identify our happiness with the fact that we own a house. There are much different sources of happiness. This is very subjective, of course. Myself, I lived in a rented place for all my life, and I consider myself a happy person.
Yeah, but not everyone might be as resourceful as you because this is related to the issue of the cost of retirement, isn't it? If you don't have a shelter over your head or permanent shelter over your head, you are at the mercy of your landlord. Would that not contribute towards the other problem of not having enough to sustain yourself in old age?
Well, of course, this is part of personal planning in life. We all have to be prudent, to be sure that we don't spend more than what we earn, and that we try to build a solid future for ourselves, for our families. I've seen this happening in Europe when Italy, an example, was a country really, really oriented towards saving, and all of a sudden people started to spend more and to borrow a lot of money. And Malaysia is also a country with a very high level of household debts. We're talking about around 84% of the GDP. So again, I see the necessity of a switching mentality where we do what actually we can do, looking forward, looking at the future, and this is part of our personal strategy. On the issue that you mentioned of being at the mercy of landlords, there, of course, is where the government can play a role in guaranteeing that the framework, the legal framework around rental contract is not penalizing the tenants.
Mm-hmm. Is there a chance of this fluctuation developing into a crisis or a recession, like what we've seen in Europe, as you mentioned, as well as in the United States 10 years ago?
Of course, there is a high correlation between housing crisis and general economic crisis. In the U.S., this was found in 12 cases out of 14 in the past 60, 70 years. And, of course, this depends very much also on the relative weight played by the construction sector on the general economic system. And Malaysia is exposed on this. The construction sector grew much faster than the economy at an average pace of 14% per year, when the GDP was going at an average of 5% per year. So the relative weight of the construction sector grew in a consistent way and in a fast way. So yes, I believe that the crisis will have consequences on the economic system. The extent of these consequences, I think, is too early to say. But yeah, we have to be prepared for more general consequences.
Mm. Are there countries facing similar issues that we can emulate? You know, are there countries who have coped better than Malaysia that we can maybe look to model our policy solution towards?
Well, for sure, we don't have to emulate the Western world. Okay. For the rest, I've seen a similar situation happening in Mongolia, in example, in Indonesia. But no, if you ask me examples to be followed, I don't see them. Mm-hmm. But because I really believe that the turnkey point will be a switching mentality at this point, more toward rent and toward saving. Mm-hmm. So this will be the real key point for the future development. Yeah.
So you like the government to have campaigns instead to educate people to consider renting and save more of the income for a rainy day?
Yes.
So last year, the budget 2018 allocated $2.2 billion to build 50,000 affordable units. What other recommendations would you give for this year with the new government in place? There's an opportunity to reset.
Well, yeah, I would ask the government to refrain from the relaxed loans that they promised in the past weeks. And I see as a key measure stepping back from the affordable housing market and being more active in that market with fiscal incentives for private developers, because this will help the developers in a way to face the crisis. They have another sector where they can invest and exploit profit opportunities, but they need somehow to be attracted there. And I believe that fiscal incentives will be the best way to do so.
Yeah. It's very political topic, isn't it? Because affordable housing, to be seen as doing something for affordable housing, is something that can boost their political standing. So this, what you're suggesting, is quite counterintuitive to what they've been naturally inclined to do. That's their incentive to use an economic term.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm an economist and not a politician, so I don't need to be reelected. But of course, I believe that if the government will accept some of our proposals and will be able to market them in the way that they are perceived as the good for the future of the country, the people will be able to accept. Of course, populism and propaganda is always the easiest way to attract consensus, but we are in a favorable moment because the government was just elected, so we are not facing a campaign in the immediate term. So maybe they might be more keen to explore solutions that are not immediately popular, but they can bring benefit in the long run.
Yeah. So the paper is titled Affordable Housing and Cyclical Fluctuation, the Property Market in Malaysia. It's available for download on the IDEAS website. Are you encouraging debate? Are you on Facebook? You know, if people want to give their feedback, is there a way they can reach you?
Well, I am on Facebook. I don't use much Facebook for debates, but they can reach me via email. carmelo.ferlito@gmail.com.
Wonderful. And we'll be following this debate in the ensuing months and years. Carmelo, thank you very much for spending the time.
Thanks. Thanks to you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.